James 4, 13 through 17. Now listen, you who say today or tomorrow we will go to this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business and make money. Why? You do not even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if it is the Lord's will, we will live and do this or that. As it is, you boast and brag. All such boasting is evil. Anyone then who knows the good he ought to do and doesn't do it sins.
We've been looking at James this week, and the series of lessons has been entitled Just Do It. And I've said this before, that it's a play off the Nike slogan, and the idea is James is just telling us, don't give me any excuses, don't quit, don't cry about anything, you just have to get it done. This is what the Lord expects you to do, and so just do it. And we come to this last lesson for tonight. Obviously, there's a whole nother chapter in James, but this meeting doesn't just go on forever, so we couldn't get to everything. But when we talk about doing the right thing, James is saying, just do it. Just get this done. And Robert Burns, the poet Robert Burns, if you've heard of him, he wrote actually in the old Scottish language, but translated into English, a line from his poem goes, "The best laid plans of mice and men often go awry." And you may have heard of that expression, you may have even used that expression, but the whole idea behind it is we plan, we have an idea of what's going to come in the future and what we want to do and what we're going to do, and then in between our planning and actually getting to where we planned, life happens and our plans change. And that's not anything new. I'm sure many of you have experienced getting ready for a trip, maybe going somewhere on a weekend, or maybe you're going to go over to somebody's house or celebrate a birthday or something like that, and then one of the kids starts running 102 degree temperature, and that, you know, all your best laid plans have now gone awry because you can't do that. Or maybe you've decided that you're saving up and you're going to buy a new car and you've got it all figured out and you're just about to get to that limit where you're going to get that new car or put that down payment on whatever it is you're looking forward to, and then somebody cracks a tooth or something and they have to go into the dentist and spend all that money on it. Life happens. And sometimes it's even more serious than that. Sometimes you have your life planned out with your husband or your wife. You have your life planned out in a specific location with your family and friends. You have your life planned out with this job that you love or whatever, and then life happens and you get fired. Or life happens and you get sick, or your loved one gets sick, or life happens and you have to move away. See, we plan and we think that we're going to be able to accomplish those plans, but it just doesn't happen. And that's what James speaks to in James 4, verses 13 through 17. He says, "Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go to such and such a city and spend a year there and engage in business and make a profit. Yet you do not know what your life will be like tomorrow. You are just a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and also do this or that. But as it is, you boast in your arrogance, and all such boasting is evil. Therefore, to one who knows the right thing to do and does not do it, to him it is sin." See, brethren, we know that we make plans, and we know, logically speaking, that those plans don't work out. And we could go back in the catalog of our memory and say, well, there was this time that, you know, X, Y, and Z happened and things didn't go according to plan, or A, B, and C happened and things didn't go according to plan. The interesting thing is, when we make plans then in the future, we forget that plans can go awry, and we have it in our head that what we've planned is going to happen. And so James is speaking to this in these five verses. And he says in verses 13 and 14, don't plan your life ignorantly. He says, once again, come now, you who say today or tomorrow we will go to such and such a city and spend a year there and engage in business and make a profit. Yet you do not know what your life will be like tomorrow. You are just a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. James is speaking to Christian business people here. People in the first century were in many respects no different than us. They had to make money, and many of them owned businesses, and they, like everybody else, want to plan for the future. And so these Christian people, business people, said, we want to expand our business, or we want to engage in business, and so they had it all planned out. They were going to go to thus and such a city, and for 1 year they were going to sell their widgets, or whatever it might be that they were doing, and they had even calculated the profit that they were going to make, like a good business person would. They knew what their expenses were. They knew how much they were going to sell the widgets for, and then they knew how much they were going to make, and they had totaled it up. They knew what city, how long they were going to be there, all those things. And so, what's the problem? I mean, wouldn't a good businessman have a business plan and want to execute it? Of course. The problem is, they weren't factoring God into the whole equation. They were looking at life and their business plan as if they were in total control of life and their destiny. And James points out to them that you don't know what will happen tomorrow, let alone a year from now. You don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, let alone if you're even going to make it to thus and such a city. You don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, let alone if you're going to be able to spend a year at this city, let alone if you're even going to make a profit, let alone whether you're even going to make it back to the city that you originated from. This brings to mind, at least to my mind, Luke chapter 12, and you have the parable of the rich landowner. And what you have is a farmer, and he's very successful. He has good harvests, and he looks around. He says, you know what, I've got everything I need and then some, so I'm going to build bigger barns to store my goods, and I'm going to essentially retire. I'm going to live life to the fullest, and, you know, we might say I'm going to play golf every day and take some lavish vacations and buy a large home and all these kinds of things. He's got it all planned out for the next, you know, 20, 30 years or however long he believes the rest of his life will last. And then God comes to him and says, you fool, your soul is required of you this very night. He didn't even have tomorrow. He built those barns, and no sooner were they built, he retired, and no sooner had he retired than his life was over. And God says, now who will own what you've accumulated? You see, one of the problems that that farmer had was he forgot about God. And so if we look at our society is really built on this whole idea that we are in control, and it's ignorant to go through life believing that we're in total control of our own fate. You know, we, science and has, and just kind of our own personalities has made us believe that if we just do certain things, then we're guaranteed a certain outcome. A young lady who's pregnant just takes the right vitamins, the right supplements, and if she just gets the right amount of rest and has her ultrasounds at the right time and the doctor's appointments at the right time and has all the right tests and so on and so forth, then her baby will come at the exact right time it's supposed to come, and that baby will be totally healthy and physically, mentally, emotionally, etc., etc., and the mother will be totally healthy. And then we believe that, well, then if we just get that young child into the right preschool or pre-kindergarten and then into the right elementary and junior high and high school, and if they have the right extracurricular activities and all those kinds of things, if they're in the youth group and so on and so forth, then they'll become a Christian, and then they'll go to this great college, and they'll graduate from this great college with this great job, and then they'll meet that special someone who's also a Christian, and then they'll have children of their own, and they'll be healthy and happy. And then after decades and decades go by, when that child at least turns 80, probably older though, because after all, they've done all the things that the doctors have told them to do, you know, exercise 30 minutes a day and, you know, watch their cholesterol and all that. Then when they're 80 or 85 or 90, they'll go to bed one night and without even knowing it's going to happen and without any pain whatsoever, they'll just very quietly and gently drift off into sleep, and the end of their life will come and they'll die with a smile on their face and then enjoy eternity in heaven. And that's, if you will, and that may be an oversimplification, but that's what our society really tells us, that if we just eat these things or do these things, then we're going to live a long time. The problem is, nothing's guaranteed like that. I would like to think that that's guaranteed, but things happen, and that changes things. People get sick. Even people that eat the right things get sick. I know a guy whose cholesterol is practically zero, and he eats some of the most cholesterol-ridden food in the world. And then I know other people who, if they eat a steamed Brussels sprout, their cholesterol shoots up 700 points. See, it just doesn't always work that way. You see, sometimes children are born and they have difficulties, in spite of all that we did to try and keep that from happening. Sometimes we send our children to the best schools, and they may not be quite the smartest person in that school. They may not get into Harvard or Yale or something like that. They may not get a job straight out of college that pays them six figures. You know, they may meet a special someone, and the marriage may look like it's going well, and then something happens. You know, and then sometimes people get sick somewhere along the way, and they have to deal for the rest with an illness for the rest of their lives that they never thought they would get. I know a lady, and she's passed away now, but she got Alzheimer's when she was about 50 years old. Now that seems way too young to get Alzheimer's, and she never thought that she would get Alzheimer's. Nobody in her family had ever had Alzheimer's. Her mother's still alive, and she's in her 90s. You see, things happen. You know, we think if my potential spouse passes all these items on my checklist, then the marriage is just going to be happy and great and problem-free. We think if I eat these things and exercise this much, I'm never going to have any health issues. And we can also lead our spiritual lives with this philosophy too. When I was younger, I used to think if I said the right thing in just the right way, and if I had the perfect answer to whatever question they would ask, then that person would accept the gospel and want to be baptized. And then it occurred to me after several times of that not working and me thinking, well, what did I say wrong? What did I do wrong? It occurred to me that not even Jesus was that successful. See, people have freedom of choice, and even though I may do my best, sometimes people are going to reject the gospel. In fact, most of the time, people are going to reject the gospel. You know, sometimes with our spiritual lives, we have this attitude of, I've got tomorrow, so I'll just get to it tomorrow. I'll get my life right with God tomorrow. I'll become more active in the church tomorrow. I'll spend more time with my family or my children tomorrow. And as James would tell us, you don't know what your life's going to be like tomorrow. You're just a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. 44, 25 years ago, seemed like it was eons away. 44 now seems like right now. 19 seems just like yesterday. And brethren, even if our life lasts to 80 or 90 or even past that, in the overall scheme of things, just even in the time that the earth has been here, it's really just a vapor. And some vapors last a little bit longer depending on how cold it is and how much air is expelled out of our lungs, but some vapors last a little bit longer, some are a little bit shorter, but they all last just a tiny moment. And so planning our lives, believing that we are in control and we have tomorrow and a year from now and 10 years from now and so on and so forth guaranteed to us is just foolish, James says. So he says, don't plan your life ignorantly. And then in verse 15, he says, do plan your life wisely. He says, instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and also do this or that. God is intimately involved in the affairs of this world. God didn't, as so many people believe, he didn't just wind the world up like a clock and set it on a table and then leave the room. He is intimately involved in a providential way in the affairs of this world. Now, we still have freedom of choice. We can still make the decisions that we can make, right or wrong or morally neutral, but God's involved in this world that goes on around us. And notice what James says. He says, instead we ought to say, if God wills, we will go to thus and such a city and spend a year there and engage in business and make a profit. But notice, he says, if God wills, we will do two things. We will live and also do this or that. Brethren, that's very sobering to me. I don't really feel comfortable with it, and I'll tell you why, and I don't think any person really feels comfortable with it in a sense. See, nothing happens in this world that God does not either cause or allow to happen. And so when James says instead we ought to say if God wills, that lets me know that we will live. That lets me know that my life is based on whether or not God wills it to continue. If God doesn't will my life to continue tomorrow, guess what? It won't continue past tomorrow. See, the reason I'm uncomfortable with that, in a sense, is because that tells me I'm not in control. I don't like not being in control. I like being able to look and say, I will be here tomorrow because I have taken good enough care of my body that I'll be here tomorrow. And I'll be here 10 years from now. And I'll be here 50 years from now. And in perfect health, too. I'll be like the 94-year-old friend that's passed away now, but he was playing tennis when he was 94 years old. Now, but I don't have that guarantee. I'm not in control. And the second part of this, we will live and also do this or that. It's more than just living. Anything I do in this life is because God has willed it so, at least from the standpoint of allowing it to occur. If God does not allow me to do it, it will not be done. I'm not in nearly as much control as I think sometimes. In Matthew 10 and verse 29, Jesus says, are not two sparrows sold for a cent, and yet not one of them falls from the nest apart from your Father who is in heaven. Notice he doesn't say without your Father knowing. He says apart from your Father. In other words, God has something to do in his providential wisdom with the bird falling out of the nest. That doesn't mean there's not freedom of choice, but at the same time, it means God is very involved in what goes on in this world. In Acts 17 and verse 28, Paul to the Athenians says, in him, in God, we live and move and exist, as even some of your own poets have said, we are his offspring. But think about that. It's God through whom we live and move and exist. If God, if you will, decided he was going to leave the room and not remember the world even for a moment, this whole universe would cease to exist. He's what sustains us and he's very involved in this world. And so the Lord has something to say about our future. Now, we certainly can and we certainly should plan. That's the responsible thing. It's not, James isn't saying let's go throughout life without any kind of plan or any kind of direction. What he's simply saying is that our continued plans and future lives depend on the Lord and his will. And so if the Lord wants us to or doesn't want to, that factors in to what we are going to do. And just think about it, brethren. What person here of any age has the life right now they envisioned when they were a child or a teenager or in college or even in their 20s? Depending on how old you are, you can just keep going. But not one person has the life they envisioned. I'm not saying your life's worse. It may be better. Maybe probably is better. But it's not the same. You know, I was 30 years old before I realized I was going to marry the most beautiful redhead around. You know, I didn't plan that. It's better than it was going, than I thought it would be. But I didn't plan that. I didn't realize that was going to happen. And, there are many, a love-struck young man or young woman who in high school or college believe that they've met the love of their life and that's their soulmate. That's the person they were destined to be with. And the only problem is the other person doesn't feel the same way. And so they're heartbroken. They're crushed and they don't think they'll ever find anybody else. And their life is not going to be nearly as good as it would have been otherwise. And then, a couple years later, they meet someone else. And as they reflect on their life, they think to themselves, I'm so glad that that prior relationship didn't work out because I've met someone who's even better for me than that person. You see, we need to plan our lives, brethren, realizing that our plans may have to change by necessity. But that can be okay because if the Lord is involved and we're prayerfully asking for his help and guidance, he's going to be with us. So James says, don't plan your life ignorantly. Do plan your life wisely. And then thirdly, he says, always plan your life humbly. He says in verse 16, but as it is, you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. Therefore, to him who knows the right thing to do and does not do it, to him it is sin. Believing that control belongs to us, total control in life belongs to us, James says that's arrogant. And think about it. It is arrogant to think that I'm on par with God and I can look at God and say, this is what I'm going to do, God, and essentially say, there's nothing you can do about it. That's arrogance. And James says that's evil. And that should obviously never be a characteristic of the Christian. And so James says, do the right thing. Well, what is the right thing? The right thing to do is to understand and plan with God's will in mind for your life. Understand that you make plans that are centered around him and his will. In Acts 16 and verse 6, Paul had a plan. He was going to preach the gospel in Asia Minor. The problem was the Holy Spirit didn't have the same plan. And so Paul, instead of preaching there, he just passed right through there. And then a little while later, he learned the reason why the Holy Spirit had that plan. It's because there was a great opportunity in Macedonia. See, Paul had a plan, but because he built his plans around God and his will, it wasn't a problem for him to forego his plan and adopt God's plan. 1 Corinthians 4 and verse 19, Paul says regarding a planned visit that he has to the church at Corinth, he says, if the Lord wills, we will come to you and see the power and not the words of those who are arrogant. See, Paul understood that his plan was to go visit the church in Corinth, but God's plan may be something different. So as Christians, we need to plan our lives humbly and wisely. How, as Christians, can we forget that God is involved in our life? How can we, as Christians, believe we're in complete control of our life? Yet so often, we just kind of fall into that habit of thinking we have tomorrow. And we have a year from now. And all the things we've planned to do are going to go off without a hitch. And then we're surprised when they don't. So how do we plan our lives around God? Well, let's get specific here. I don't know if you use a day planner to plan your week and your months and your years, or maybe you use the calendar on your phone, or maybe you just store it up here in your head. Maybe you write it down on a piece of paper, or maybe you just decide that you don't want to keep up with that and you let your wife do it. However you do that, here's what you need to do to plan your life around God. You take that day planner, you take that calendar, and you erase everything in it. Just erase everything in it. And then from now until the year 2200, because I don't think any of us will be here in 2200. From now until the year 2200, you go through, and every Sunday morning at 9 a.m. you put in Bible study, and 10 a.m. worship, and 6 p.m. worship, and Wednesday p.m. at 7, Bible study again. And then you put that on a repeat all the way through 2200. You see, what you've done there is you've put God at the center of your plans. And then you go through and you write in all the things, all the times you're going to do the Lord's work in there. So you write in, you make your appointment, so to speak, concerning when you're going to go and evangelize to your neighbors, when you're going to go talk to them about Jesus, the time you're going to have them over, so that you can get to know them a little better, to at least prep so you can have an opportunity to tell them about Jesus. You put in the gospel meetings and the times you're going to go visit people in the hospital and those kinds of things. See, you put God first in that day planner. And then after that, then you go back through and you put in your kids' recreational activities, the family vacations you're going to make or take, the times you're going to decompress or get away, or your downtime, or your golf outings, or whatever the case may be. See, what James is telling us is the right thing to do is to plan around God and His will, not around us and our will. It may be that I want to go somewhere and engage in business for a year and make a profit, and that's not wrong. But if I've relegated God to second place, then it is wrong. If I think that I'm in total control of that and God doesn't have really anything to say about it, then it is wrong. And one thing that should never go on our calendar, on our day planner, is anything that's contrary to God's will. That should never, ever, ever be penciled in to our calendar. And so if somebody comes up to you and says, are you free February the 11th, 2035 at 10 a.m.? You're going to say, well, just let me check my schedule for a second. And you're going to flip through it and you're going to say, oh, nope, I'm not free. I've got worship at that time. And I already checked this, so that is a Sunday morning. That is a Sunday. But you can say, is there another time that we can get together? But you see, I've already made the decisions. If I do that, I've already made the decision about whether or not I'm going to put God first any given Sunday or Wednesday, any given time of my life. I've already put God first. Now, obviously, that may be an oversimplification, but I think, at least I hope, that James's point is being communicated here. You see, we should never plan our life ignorantly, and thinking we're in control of our lives is just ignorance. We should plan our lives wisely, understanding that God in His providence is in control of this world and the events of this world, and nothing happens that He doesn't cause or allow. And we should always plan our lives humbly, planning our lives around Him. And so, where are you tonight? How have you been planning your life so far? If you're not a Christian, if you've not been immersed in water in order to have your sins forgiven, then you've not even begun to plan your life around God. And as bad as that is, what's even worse is you've not even begun to plan your afterlife around God. And that has eternal repercussions. And so when we sing this next song, if you're not a Christian, come forward and sit on one of the front rows and let this church help you become a Christian, so that not only can you begin to plan your life, your physical life around God, but so that you can plan your spiritual life around God and enjoy a home in heaven. Maybe you are a Christian, but for whatever reason, you stopped planning your life around God. You've believed you're in total control. Maybe you've even stopped planning your life around God and started penciling into your calendar several things that God doesn't want you to do in the first place. And if that's the case, come forward when we sing this next song. Repent of your sins and make your life right with God, because it's not just this life that we need to plan for around God, but much more importantly, it's the next life that we need to plan for as well, with God in mind. So don't leave here unless you're a Christian. Don't leave this auditorium unless you're guaranteed to go to heaven. If you need to, please come forward while we stand and while we sing.